Welcome to The Sandbox, a Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast. Participate in the podcast and get your level 7 access by calling 304-837-2278 or go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And now, here are your hosts, Mike and Dave.
Welcome, everybody, to The Sandbox, a Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast, where we have to wonder how old those Twinkies Deke found are. My name is Mike.
And I'm Dave, and this is show number 92 of The Sandbox, where we'll be discussing Season 5, Episode 13 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., entitled Principia, which aired March 16th, 2018.
And this episode was written by the very familiar pairing of Craig Titley and directed by Brad Turner. And this was an episode that basically was bringing some things to the table that were expected. A lot of people were not expecting some guest appearances that showed up in this one, but it was a lot of fun. And I am glad that this one is taking a different turn so that we can learn more about this team that General Hale is putting together, because I was a little bit worried last week that it was going to be so different from the first half of S.H.I.E.L.D. And it looks like it's going to have some surprises in store for us.
Yeah, and I'm glad you phrased it that way, and I'm going to withhold my comments until we get into the discussion proper.
Okay, but one thing that I do want to mention up front is one of those unexpected elements, and that was the return of Spencer Treat Clark as Alex Braun, a.k.a. Werner Von Strucker. He was away since, gosh, I guess that was Season 3 that Hive and all that was happening, and of course his part in it was short-lived then, so to have him brought forward here is an interesting turn of events. But, you know, Carl Creel was already added to the mix too, so we're definitely going into the vault. Spencer Treat Clark landed a recurring role on TNT's Animal Kingdom since his last appearance, so you can see him on TV, but it's really interesting to have him return after his traumatic experience in Season 3 with a little hint of powers. So we'll have to see how this shapes up.
All right, sounds good.
So let's get right into it then and dive in with our episode discussion.
All right, well, Mike, I think it's fair to say this is a setup episode, and we've established long ago that there's nothing wrong with a setup episode when you've got a full 22 or 24 episode season. And I did like this episode a lot. You said it was fun. It absolutely was fun. But the impression I got was that the writers might be trying a little bit too hard to make things fit, to make connections. Are there too many callbacks, for instance?
Well, I think Von Strucker maybe fits the mold a little bit better than Carl Creel does. I think we were mentioning at the time that the fact that General Hale just said, but I'm putting together a team. And he just was like, oh, okay, and got in the car. But yeah, the fact that Deathlok was also making an appearance, it does seem like they're trying to pull a lot of highlights in from previous seasons, which again, sort of makes me wonder if they're building up towards a series finale because of the, you know, sort of like the highlights reel in terms of guest spots.
Yeah. And certainly one thing that did occur to me is that Faith is going to have no problem this week coming up with some sassy lines because there's plenty. And there again, I guess I felt like they were maybe trying a little too hard. And it's almost as if
I didn't care about that as much.
They just discovered dramatic irony and let's throw as many things at the audience as we can. And it's okay because we love.
You're talking about the Fitz and Deke stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
But, you know, that's okay. So but, you know, the whole idea of Deathlok, and certainly it's made its appearance with, you know, Mike. But now, you know, Daisy has mentioned it, and the team has this interest in Deathlok. And, you know, what is that? I mean, is it just simply to get Mike on the team?
No. And this is cool. I think it's mostly Daisy and May that are interested in the Deathlok program because they are refusing to accept Coulson's fatalism. And so they want to see if they can pull out sort of like a John Garrett with the tech from Cybertech, because of course that's the company he used to get his lifespan extended. And so they're trying to pull a triple whammy. Let's get CyberTech to help us with the gravitonium. Let's get them to help us out with the problem of Elena's arms. And let's see if they can fix this Coulson problem too with Deathlock Tech.
Yeah, and this didn't get a lot of screen time, but I think it really may be the most important thematic idea in the whole episode, because I think Coulson does have a point that he's already had one unnatural life given to him, and now it's perfectly fine to accept his fate. But as you said, Daisy and May just won't let it go. And who's right, who's wrong?
Well, here's the problem I have. Coulson's not being specific as to what he said to Ghost Rider. I mean, was it the deal that you let me use your powers for a little bit to defeat the powers that be in season 4, and you can take me after a specific period of time? It's almost like he's saying, in order for us to defeat this one enemy, I'll cut my life short. And that does seem to be a little bit non-specific. So I wouldn't mind if he spelled it out a little bit more to maybe make his case for why it's pointless to help him.
Okay, but then is that circumventing the deal with Ghost Rider?
Oh, maybe.
But I do love the fact that it's Daisy and May, and it's perfectly understandable. I mean, we've talked at length about Daisy and Coulson as the father-daughter combination, but certainly now with the romantic entanglement with May, and really for her, I mean, certainly she did have Andrew, and that ended badly on at least one level. But it's like they've both been given a second chance at love, and he's willing to let it go, so you understand where she's coming from.
Yeah, I really like that aspect of it. And we also have in the background of our minds what Elena said, which was that future Elena, that is, where you have to let him go in order to save the world. He's going to die, and you have to let him. So that puts a whole nother spin on it that I don't think Daisy and May are taking into account. Although I don't know if they're in the know about that particular thing that was said in the future. So that might be part of it as well.
Yeah, and that's certainly easy to forget. That whole destruction of the Earth looms in the background. So again, as you said, we don't really know who knows what. But speaking of love, I mentioned last time that Mac has really grown on me. His character has evolved to an individual that I really love the way he approaches everything. And if we ever questioned, and I don't think we did, so this is really rhetorical, but if we questioned his love and devotion to Elena, those doubts are squashed in that early scene when she asks how he'll feel about dating a robo person, given, of course, his well-known hatred for robots and that whole heart and soul he tells her. And of course, it sets up the little sex joke for Simmons, which was pretty funny.
Yeah, those aren't the most important parts. How dare you, you cad.
Yeah.
But I also like that he talks about his hatred for robots here, and it comes up later on the flying boat where he is scared of heights, he's scared of water, and he's scared of robots. He's got the triple play there.
Yeah, and obviously Elena is still having a difficult time coping with her new situation, and that's understandable. And I guess on a lot of levels, she's really made remarkable progress, and thanks to Simmons and to Mac. But I love her reaction to Mac, who's, you know, tucking her in and pulling the covers up. And it's like, if I had arms, I'd strangle you right now. And then when he says that thing about the heart and soul, it's like, okay, forgiven. Or I forget exactly the word she uses. But
nice save, I think she said.
Yeah, but that feeling that she's got no future, and again, feeling like she finally found somebody, and telling Simmons she wants to have children with him, which is certainly something that we've really never talked about with the agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I mean, Simmons and Fitz are married now, and we obviously know they're going to have at least one daughter.
Yeah, and it's a nice flavor to add to it, especially this late in the series. And I also like the fact that she was a little bit too accepting of her fate last week. And here we see some of the difficulties she's having, like when she gets up and forgets she doesn't have arms and falls out of bed, but then doesn't want Simmons' help. Just let me sit here for a minute. That's a real moment. It's much more believable to have her ups and downs. And in fact, she does apologize to Simmons later for acting that way, because she's kind of in the depths of despair. She doesn't think they can change anything. She thinks they're destined to end up with the future that they just left. And Simmons has to bring her around to feeling a little bit hopeful because they have to try.
Right. And I like the scene with Coulson when he explains about his own arm and how cool it is. And really, that should give her hope, at least from a visual standpoint. But I also like that he doesn't, you know, lie to her. He tells her the truth. No, I really don't feel anything.
Right. And so that's going to be an adjustment for her. And it basically has the connotation of the loss of senses, where it's not just a matter of replacing the limb. It's the fact that you won't be able to, you know, feel the breeze on your skin, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned her falling out of bed and finding herself on the floor. I almost thought we were going to get that scene where she struggles to get up without Simmons' help, but probably would have been pretty difficult to film.
Yeah, for sure. I think they must have had her arms tucked inside because it looked like she was very broad-shouldered. Did you see that?
I did, yes.
I think that was a practical effect this time.
Yeah. So now, obviously, one of the main storylines revolves around the rift and the fact that it's going critical again and they're going to need gravitonium to seal it. And they get right to it, and I guess that's a certain sense of urgency that the show is in the middle of. Daisy brings up Cybertech as having gravitonium, and then, of course, well, what happened to Cybertech? And then Deke enters the room. Everybody goes silent, and I'm thinking, like, really?
Yeah, Coulson invited him because he knows about gravitonium, but it does seem odd that the rest of the team doesn't necessarily want him in on this discussion. It's like they're back home. They want to fit into their comfortable routine, but they're going to exclude him. I mean, that's not how they acted towards him in the future. So why act that way now?
Right. And what did they think he was going to do? Just sit in his room alone while they go about their business? And I love that one scene with Fitz when Fitz questions really his worth. Do you know how high my IQ is? Neither do I, because they didn't measure it in the future. Man was measured by how long he could survive.
That's right. And of course, grandfather hints come to us hard and fast, starting in this scene where Coulson asks Deke to stay behind and Fitz to stay behind. And he says that he's not a babysitter. And you immediately got the sense that, oh, they're going to keep doing this, aren't they? And they did.
Well, see, at that point, I didn't think they were going to do it throughout the entire episode. And don't get me wrong, I did enjoy it. I really did. But the other thing, Daisy ungrounds herself, and it's another story arc that we really haven't talked about lately, her regaining her powers, and we really haven't made any progress in that realm.
Yeah, she's still got the inhibitor behind her ear, presumably.
And now that they're back, I think when they were on the Earth sliver in the future, Simmons mentioned needing the right tools. Well, now that they're back, I would think the tools exist, but I guess they have more pressing concerns with the rift. Although if Daisy has her powers, who knows?
Well, the other thing is that the lighthouse only has 1980s tech. They don't have the same stuff that they would have had back in their old SSR base. They have probably some stuff on Zephyr and other places, but probably not very sophisticated, which is kind of brought up when they talk about Elena's arms and, you know, we don't really have the materials we need. And that, of course, sets up the solution that Mac eventually comes up with.
Right. Now, I guess you can't very well send Deke out with a shopping list every other day.
Right.
Now, we get introduced to this guy, Anthony Kane, who I don't believe we've run into him before, but his appearance, and it's probably just a one-off, but he was really great. And that scene where they're in the little car chase, he's in his Corvette in the parking garage, doesn't last long. They get out. Mac Hammer? Candyman?
Yeah, now I like this sequence of jokes a little bit better than the Fitz grandpa jokes, the whole MC Hammer stuff. Definitely, I think someone mentioned on the Facebook group that, does Faith really even need to do more than just the can't touch this joke? Because I don't think there's anything that's going to beat that particular joke. But yeah, I like this guy. I like the connections that they had to Cybertech because it makes sense that they would try to place some Hydra scientists the same way they did during Project Paperclip after World War II. So I like the scenario that they came up with to find this guy and get directed towards whoever knew what happened to the last of the gravitonium.
Yeah, and it was great that he was able to give us some background into Mac's past, in that he's really the same Mac that we know, one that really wants to question breaking rules if we don't need to, and that very often he's the conscience of the team.
Well, the other thing that reminded me of when we first met Mac, back when Bobby and Hunter and all those guys first came on board, is that he was just the mechanic. He did not go out into the field, and he certainly wasn't one that would use a gun and beat up people. Now, I don't know that we necessarily characterized him as a pacifist, but Anthony Kane certainly characterizes him as someone who would never have stayed behind to beat up the robots while the rest of the team ran off. He even mentioned something about, this is not the Mac I remember. And some of that's for the better. Some of that's unfortunate that he had to change his personality that way, but you know, needs must.
Well, and in fact, when I think it's Coulson kind of apologizing for how the mission seemed to go sideways, and he's like, are you kidding me? A flying ship and fighting robots? I can die a happy man.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a cool character.
Right. Now, you know, we've talked a little bit about the jokes about Fitz being the grandfather to Deke, but certainly, you know, the whole meet the Fitzsimmons family, or is it the Simmons Fitz family?
Technically, that's right. It would be Simmons Fitz, wouldn't it?
Right. Now, if there's ever been a nod to the fans, obviously this is it.
Yeah.
Because we've been talking about Fitzsimmons since the first season. But as you mentioned, he makes no secret about being displeased to be saddled with Deke while everybody else goes on the gravitonium hunt. And when Deke comes out of that storage, and again, it's certainly understandable. You mentioned the Twinkies in the opening. It's certainly understandable for him to just kind of go exploring because he's been confined his entire life. He comes out with a glove and ball. I'm just impressed he knows what they actually are, although he did say, you know, about people having big hands.
Yeah. Well, I also think it's interesting that Deke would do that because it must be really surreal for him to be wandering around in parts of the lighthouse that he's probably familiar with, but they're completely different in the past. And also probably some levels that were off limits because of the roaches that were had taken over. So I think it must be something that is both fun and eerie for him. But yeah, you're, like you said, it's understandable that he would go exploring. But I think the first one that kind of bothered me, not bothered me, see, I feel like we're being a little bit too harsh on the grandpa jokes, but pulling out a ball and glove and then wanting to play catch, that might have been a little bit on the nose.
Well, it really calls back to Kevin Costner, Field of Dreams, and that scene where he has the catch with his dad, who's obviously younger than him at that point. But it does give him a chance to, you know, tell him you don't have to be a cranky old man.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great because he doesn't know, but we know that's the dramatic irony you were referring to earlier.
Yeah. Now, the other thing that occurred to me is that Fitz's personality does seem a bit off. And I guess I'm excusing it because of the stress caused by the rift.
But it is odd.
It is odd, and I don't really believe he's all that bothered with the fact that Deke's around.
No, I guess he's just not enjoying the wide-eyed novice nature of his experience, even just with, you know, how deep is the ocean? Do you guys go on vacations down there? That sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. And that's okay. You know, his line when he finds a Twinkies, I got to meet the chef that invented these. But I'm not sure how I feel about the return of the fear dimension.
Right. Well, I already had you already know my feelings on that. I didn't really care for it to begin with.
Right. And I understand that it gives us a chance for Deke's mother to appear and talk to him and utter that line that, of course, leads to more connections in terms of his birth. But
well, anybody who didn't see that coming a mile away. I mean, it was clearly set up exactly for the reveal that we knew was coming.
Right. And again, he gets in another, I need a Zima line. And what I didn't realize, somebody in the Facebook group pointed out that Zimas are not for sale anymore. Or
you can get them internationally, I think, is what they said in the Facebook group, like in Japan or something.
Okay, right. And I said, no, I think somebody said that's pretty far to go. And I'm thinking, well, not if you have Zephyr 1 at your disposal.
That's right.
But, you know, you mentioned the ocean. So what they find out is that the gravitonium that existed was put on a ship, the Principia, but it went down in an electrical storm. And of course, Fitz starts searching the world's oceans and he comes up empty. And I love that thought process that suddenly Deke has a revelation and says, you need to look up in the sky. And everybody's like, what?
Well, that's the thing, is that the fact that it comes from Deke, that's what's cool about it. Because here he's someone who's out of place. They don't know if his usefulness is anything to write home about. And here he is coming up with this key detail.
Right. And it really is that first step in gaining respect, at least scientifically, and as a contributor to the team from Fitz, because you look at Fitz and he almost wants to say something, but he realizes, no, he's right. That's what we need to do. We need to start looking up there. And, you know, then we cut to Zephyr. And as soon as I think Coulson says, this is like looking for a needle in a haystack, it's like, whoa, there it is.
I know. Well, I get the sense they've been looking for a while. But how cool was that? I mean, of all the different concepts that they came up with in this season, but also in this particular episode where they had to contrive circumstances to get Deke's mother in there so he could figure out about his grandparents, this was something that was just unexpected and just a really cool way to go about increasing the tension, being able to have moments of, are they going to make it? And having some tie-in with General Hale, because of course she prepared for this exact eventuality with some robots that she left behind.
Right, because once they board the Principia and they find the crew dead, it doesn't take them long to realize that somebody's already been here and taken the gravitonium, but suddenly Mac finds a piece about the size of a softball, and here's where Deke is able to step up again and take charge. And again, you get that look from Simmons and Fitz that, okay, you know, maybe he will earn his spot on the team. And he tells them what to do. And they, of course, do it. Team returns with the gravitonium. Fitz takes it and makes that snide comment about Deke. Well, you're going to come or you're just going to stand there? It's like, after you, Grandpa.
Yeah, because by that point, he has made the discovery by overhearing the conversation between Simmons and Elena. But I also like the fact that they were able to bring back some robot arms to maybe help with Elena's problem. So maybe next week we'll see her with some newfangled prosthetics.
Yeah, and I love how Mac just drags it in.
Present for you. Yeah. Couple beers and arms.
Yeah. Now, what the heck is Hale up to? I mean, we've got Wernher von Strucker, a.k.a. Alex. We've got Ruby, who we were introduced to before and then didn't see her for a few weeks. But what is she doing? I mean, before we get to that, though, we're reintroduced to Alex. What should we call him, Alex, at this point?
Or? Oh, yeah. Well, that's what he was before. I mean, just to bring everyone up to speed in case you didn't go to Wikipedia and places like that, like I did, just to remind myself, this was Alex Braun, which was his alias that he went by because he didn't want to be associated with von Strucker and the family that was Hydra connected. Yet he got sucked in with Hive, who was trying to resurrect Hydra after the fall of that organization and was kind of coerced into doing his bidding, but also was beaten quite badly. And when they finally got him over to S.H.I.E.L.D. to see what he knew, I think Lincoln it was that kind of zapped him with some electricity while he was in the memory machine, the Tahiti machine that Coulson was subjected to back in the day. And that's apparently what gave him his powers here in this return that we see him, where he can remember everything, recall any memory, no matter how minor, and use it to his advantage. I'm not sure how much of a superpower that is for this team that Hale is apparently putting together, but I guess it's better than nothing.
Well, and that opening scene where he's meeting with a shrink who proposes Thorazine to quell his violent outbursts, but then that's where his power or his skill or whatever we want to call it starts to manifest itself. And it's one thing to have total recall of memories of the experiences of your own life, but apparently he has now total recall of virtually everything that's going on around him. Because and I like how they played that scene out for how he knows all of those details about the doctor.
Right. Whether it was an envelope left in the trash can or overhearing conversations out in the hall.
Right. Now, where did the violence come from, though?
Well, I think it's because of the abuse he suffered, not only at his father's hands in his youth, but also at the hands of Kibo and Hive back in season 3.
Right. Now, can he block his memories? So obviously he has a lot of bad memories, which Ruby brings up.
Well, no, because he brings up the fact that when he's dreaming at night, he has perfect recall of how the torture felt even. So he re-experiences it for real, I think, in at least in his dreams.
Okay. So what is it that Hale wants Alex to remember about his father? I mean, is she attempting to resurrect Hydra or at least her own version of it?
Well, I think she would scoff at you for thinking that. You know, I think that's probably what a lot of us would jump to that conclusion, but she wants to make something completely new. But that being said, it does seem like she wants to pick his brain, or at least pick his memories clean of what Baron von Strucker may have had in his vault of knowledge with what Hydra and the power that organization gave to him. I'm not sure what useful information she can gain from that, but that's clearly what she's after and what she wants Ruby to help her get.
But I guess maybe I wasn't clear. Is this U.S. Air Force sanctioned or is this something off book?
Definitely think it's off book. There's been some speculation, and we'll hear in the listener feedback later, that maybe this is Hammer coming from the comics, which sort of went against what S.H.I.E.L.D. wanted. So basically a different philosophy of how to control and protect the world populace. So it's interesting because I think by the end of it all, May even says, you know what? I don't think this is your garden variety military general gotten too big for her britches. This is clearly something else. And the fact that she talks about putting together her own organization does seem to indicate that it's not Hydra, but it might as well be. It's just another power-hungry person who has their own vision of how to do things.
Right. And bring down the status quo.
Right.
So now I like how they presented Alex in this disoriented state. Where am I? You know, he goes into that break room, he finds the food, and you see him scrambling, putting stuff on his plate. And it's almost like he realizes, all I've got on here is bagels and donuts. He sees the fruit, almost like guilt that he should be eating better. And then Ruby waltzes in and she doesn't even acknowledge that he's there. I loved it.
Right. And I think we are told later that all of the things that Ruby does in this opening set of interactions with Alex are strategic, including that. She wants to drive him a little bit crazy and make him wonder what's going on so that he's made off balance and she can play her advantage. But it's interesting to try and interpret what Ruby is up to because all of her movements are very robotic. Her face is almost expressionless unless it's necessary for her to smile in order to persuade, let's say, or seduce. And so it's really difficult to figure out what Ruby's up to.
Well, and we certainly know that her relationship with her mother is not strong. So it seems hard to believe she would want to do something for her mother that would be exactly what her mother wants. I mean, her mother mentions the beacon doing what it's supposed to do. Maybe you could do what you're supposed to do. So clearly they've got that kind of relationship where each sees the other in that light.
Well, I think Ruby's just biding her time until her own agenda can be enacted because, you know, her mother does say something about, and don't you go off the rails either. And she just kind of gives her a curt nod. But I think the most telling sequence here is when she's told to use her feminine wiles to maybe get Alex to come back around because Alex has basically said he wants no part of it. He doesn't care if they kill him. She says, I'm not going to kill you. I'm going to let you go. And then she wants Ruby to try and persuade him not to leave. And she does, except the way she persuades him is by talking about doing their own thing, making their own team and taking over from the domineering mother. And Ruby is not letting her mother in on that. You know, I just love the closing dialogue that those two have where her mom says, how did you convince him to stay? And Ruby says, I told him the truth. And what she means by that is she told him the truth about her own motives.
Right. And then we certainly have to go back and ask the question, what kind of mother asks her daughter to do that?
Is this not really her daughter?
Well, you know, when we were talking before going on the air, and I mentioned for Ruby, does she have a power or a skill?
Yeah, I don't know. Because we clearly have seen the fact that she can use those circle blades, but they seem to be preternatural. So I don't know if we think of that as not being human, being inhuman, or a third category.
Is she just always in the zone?
Yeah, who knows? I kind of like that they're playing it close to the vest, both with General Hale's specific motives and Ruby's motives in general, or Ruby's nature, I should say, in general, because it's a fun mystery to try and solve.
Yes, it is. But, you know, a really good episode. I mean, certainly not action-packed, and that's okay. A lot of the issues that we need to address were addressed, and, you know, we got plenty of time for things to develop, even if this is it for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Right. I mean, I think it's really just comes down to we have fun with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. no matter what. Does it measure up to season 4 or even the first half of season 5? No. But may it eventually measure up? Sure. You know, there's potential there for some really great storytelling. It's just, I think having a couple of hiccups here and there, but overall, still just as fun as any of the other seasons. And I would certainly put it up against season 2 or 3 any day so far. So really can't wait to see where this latter half of the season is going. And hopefully they have a lot of surprises in store for us, as I think is pretty much a given.
Yeah. Now, before we get out of the discussion, just one thing, because we've talked about Deke and the grandfather, and he has certainly recognized what the reality of the situation is. How long until he lets them know what he's figured out?
Yeah, how is it going to come out? That's a good question. Because is it beneficial in any way for him to tell them? Or is it perhaps beneficial of him to keep it secret so that it doesn't upset the apple cart? Because he already has a kind of a tenuous relationship with the team anyway. So maybe he'll choose not to share that information.
Or might it be General Hale that shares the DNA information that she has?
That, I think, is more likely, yeah.
So, anyway, that's the one thing I'm most looking forward to.
Okay. Yeah, the confrontation is building. Like you said, it is a setup episode, and so we'll see where it heads because, you know, we've still got plenty of season left. But like you said at the top of the podcast, I think Faith is going to have no problem coming up with some sass this week. But let's face it. I think we know which one's going to win, but let's give it the old fair play here and listen to Faith's ColSAS report.
Hello, everyone. It's time for the ColSAS report. This episode may have been light on sass, but we all know there's a clear frontrunner. But before I get to those, here's the winner from last week. In our closest poll of the season, by only one vote, Tomorrowland.
But there are clouds and sky.
Which is why its underground existence should be very alarming.
I'd say that's impossible, but after our round trip to Tomorrowland, my threshold for preposterous is way out of whack.
By the way, thank you, Taltos, for picking up my slack and posting the poll on Facebook. And now, for this week's contenders. Number 1, Doom and Gloom.
I was just coming to see you.
Tidings of comfort and joy.
Warnings of doom and gloom.
Number 2, Thank you for your service.
Please, please just go, because you are giving me a headache.
Well, I'm sorry that I have never seen an ocean before. Where I was born, you guys already blew up the planet. So thank you very much for your service.
He never stops. It's like somebody let Scrappy do in here.
And the winner, I mean, number 3, can't touch this.
Hey, Mac Hammer. Can't touch this.
Now's not the time.
Sorry, couldn't resist.
Did I miss your favorite moment? Probably not. Please be sure to join Taltos next week in tweeting your favorites to FBMC with the hashtag ColSAS. To vote for this week's contenders in the poll that I will definitely remember to post, please visit facebook.com/groups/agentsofshieldgsm. While you do that, I'm going to go reread some comics and brush up on my Hammer knowledge. Have a great week, everybody.
Okay, yeah. Some great lines there. And I like seeing Coulson back in his form. All right. Well, let's get into our listener feedback. And we're going to start off with some interesting feedback we got right after the last podcast from Rainbird, who wanted to tell us that, Dave, your speculation about Daisy's fear in that fear episode last week did actually appear. Rainbird says, you wondered why Daisy's scary nun didn't show up from the fear dimension. Actually, there is a nun in full habit walking across the damaged basement in the very first scene of drone footage. We never see her again. And I went back and looked at it, and sure enough, Daisy's nun was...
Yeah, as did I, as soon as we got that email from Rainbird. So that was pretty cool.
Thank you, Rainbird.
All right, well, we heard from Taltos, who says, it's nice that Mac brought back the robots to scavenge parts for Yo-Yo's arm, but I really hope they at least took the time to check for trackers before returning to the lighthouse. Hmm.
Yeah, because those are from General Hale, right?
Is General Hale that smart? Especially as the last General Hale-related device they brought back exploded and resulted in the creation of a space-time rift.
Good point.
I really can't get a handle on Ruby. The head scar seems to indicate she's human, but she rarely shows emotion other than when she's sarcastic. Some of her movements appear almost robotic. You mentioned that.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad she honed in on that same detail. And I forgot to mention the scar because, you know, Alex and Ruby do share some childhood memories, which kind of puts a, you know, a hole in the whole robot theory. But she does act robotic. And yet the fact that General Hale's family has a past with Hydra, although, you know, General Hale insists that she despised Von Strucker, but clearly they walked in the same circles. And I thought that was an interesting detail that he remembered from their shared childhood.
All right. She says Ruby seems resentful of her captivity, but doesn't hesitate to follow General Hale's orders. I'm genuinely not sure if her suggestion of forming their own team was just Ruby playing Alex or the first signs of a rebellion against her mother.
I think it's the latter.
What kind of insane operating budget does General Hale have if she can afford to have at least half a dozen high-tech robots to guard a floating ship that no one else has found since it disappeared?
Yeah, because presumably she went to get the gravitonium relatively recently. But I really do think that Ruby is biding her time to rebel against her mother's wishes. And Alex is her first chance at maybe making that happen. All right, we heard from Skimmins again, of course. She says, it was a simple moment, but I really loved the exchange between Elena and Phil about, did the arms feel the same? It's little moments like this that really enhance the series for me. I'll admit the writers had a believable reason to have Deke help Fitz, but I have to say I wasn't thrilled with the team-up post-biological reveal, as it feels a bit forced doing the team-up now versus had they had them working together more before it. You can feel the family reveal scene coming from a mile away. Yeah, see, Skimmins is right on the same wavelength again here. I actually hope they all find it a nice moment and savor it some, but don't do the traditional cliche over-excitement at the news, because yes, it's nice having the moments, but they know each other more as friends rather than grandparents Deke remembers but didn't get enough time with. Anyone else suspecting Ruby let Alex out, or is that just me? She's only had two scenes so far, but I'm already giving MVP to Natalia. I can't believe you're married to Fitz either, Gemma. I think the fear dimension has gone 3D. I have to say, Deke's mom looks more like she's related to Ava than Gemma. I'm really glad Deke got to be the hero of the episode with his knowledge, because he deserved that moment with the way Fitz was treating him. Coulson's Mac Hammer, you can't touch this line, has to be in the SAS moments, and of course it is. And I'm already picking it as my winner because that was well done. Now that Deke knows about his connection to them, I'm wondering if him being overprotective of Fitz and Simmons might actually lead to problems for them. There is still that Gemma's still dead comment flash forward Fitz made, so might something Deke does set up a situation like that? I don't want Gemma dead, but it could make for an intense scene. I really hope they keep the goo-goo for my grandparents, Deke, down to a minimum in coming episodes, because while cute to a point, again, those scenes usually end up feeling cliche more than anything with most series. Mac wins Best Significant Other this episode. Who else is excited for Ruby versus Hale? Regarding next week's episode, Framework Fits, yay! And I'm assuming Skimmins has seen the preview for next week. I have not. So.
Oh, and so has Dave, unfortunately. Yes.
I'll read this carefully to try and not spoil myself. I love that's seemingly going to be Fitz's fear because he's clearly been battling that side of himself since it happened. I know the episode will most likely still end with him as the good guy, but I hope they don't just easily write off his darkness as well, because like it or not, that is a part of him, just as Bahrain is part of May. A good episode overall. And I like that Skimmins mentioned that, because we talked about last week with the wedding, how we didn't see any remnants of that Fitz or even any trepidation on his part about that dark side that's still inside of him. So it is nice that they might continue to address that if what Skimmins says is true about the preview that I didn't see.
Right, because we did, as we mentioned, see a certain tension in Fitz throughout this episode, but then we have that scene with he and Simmons where, you know, the whole husband, wife,
yeah,
which, you know, was pretty tender, and that was the, you know, the Fitz that we learned to love back in, you know, seasons 1 through 3.
But that's a good point. Maybe that weirdness that we experienced where he wasn't being very nice is like the benign manifestation of the former dark Fitz.
Right. And it's just something he's battling to keep inside.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, we also heard from Faith, who says, love the episode. I'm especially happy that Deke figured out the connection to Simmons Fitz on his own.
Simmons Fitz.
I'm curious if he'll tell them or go to Daisy first. Oh, I didn't think of that. That's good.
Yeah.
I have some questions about Hale. Why does she need gravitonium?
Yeah.
What information does she need from Strucker Jr. if she thought his father was so insane? Why is she putting together a team that is essentially Hammer? For information on Hammer, Michael posted a link on the Facebook group.
Yeah, that's Michael Keller, not me.
Is she in charge, or is there someone bigger and badder that's giving her direction? Also, is Ruby wicked smart and fully playing Strucker, or is she going to turn on her mother in the end? My bet, she's going to kill everyone and just walk off into the sunset.
Yeah. No, again, just like Taltos was asking this, Faith, I definitely think she's going to turn on her mother. But I always say these things with like utter confidence, like, well, of course this is what's going to happen. But who knows? It could be something completely different. I do think she's going to try and get the Hammer team. I think it's interesting that we're talking about Hammer in the same episode as the MC Hammer jokes that were in there earlier. But so far they've got Creel, they've got Ruby, and they've got Alex. I don't feel like you really have a super team unless you have one more, Dave.
Yeah.
So maybe there'll be a fourth one coming into play. I don't know. Maybe they'll talk to Deathlok somehow. I don't know.
Well, then there are a lot of Inhumans still running around.
That's right. Yeah, that's true. So we'll see where it ends up one way or the other for Ruby and the others. But we hope you enjoyed this episode and our discussion of it. But that's going to be it for this edition of The Sandbox. Keep up with show news and fan interaction by following us on Twitter at @Shield_GSM. And our popular Facebook group is at facebook.com/groups/AgentsOfShieldGSM, which is also where you can vote on the Kolsas report.
And Mike and I will be back next week with our discussion of episode 14 of season 5 entitled The Devil Complex. Remember, after the episode airs, head on over to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback to share your thoughts. Write us a message, record a comment using your computer's microphone, or just call 304-837-2278.
And if you get a chance, please rate and review The Sandbox wherever you get your podcasts to let us know how you're enjoying our coverage of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
And you know, Mike, I have to say, I definitely agree with Deke's mother. Daisy is cute.